Please open your Bibles to Mark chapter 5. Mark chapter 5. Begin there in just a moment, but first it's great to see everyone here today. It's a little bit of a chilly day, but the sun is out and a beautiful time for us to be together, to be able to remember God's amazing grace and His gift that He's given to us in Jesus, and the gift that we can gather together to remember each first day of the week when we come together around this table and just proclaim Jesus. Proclaim Jesus crucified, buried, raised, ascended, returning. Just an amazing thing that God has given to us to be able to do that together as a family. Our brother read for us the totality of the text that we're going to consider this morning in Mark chapter 5. And I want to begin by just kind of asking a question that will get us to think about something this morning. What is the opposite of belief? Now, if we were on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, everybody could type in their response to that question. We could poll the audience, right, and get the answer for the most of us. But I think in general terms, we would most likely say that the opposite of belief is unbelief. Is that pretty much what everybody kind of thought of when I asked that question? Well, in this text today, Jesus is going to help us to see that there is yet another enemy to belief that we need to think about and be aware of and know that it might possibly creep up in our own lives. And in this particular story, and actually in both of the stories, that we see that the opposite, the enemy of belief is not unbelief. The enemy of belief is fear. Fear is the opposite of faith in this particular story. In fact, both of these stories put together. This is a story that Mark gives us kind of in the form of a sandwich. You know, we get the first part of Jairus' story there at the beginning, and then interrupting that story is the woman with the flow of blood. And then once that issue is settled, we get back to Jairus' story or his part of the story. And so we've got two major miracles happening that are listed out for us here in the same context. And there's this interruption of the story. They don't just happen one miracle of healing versus once that's done, then this other miracle of healing. Think about what's gone on in this text earlier in the chapter. If you remember, very long time ago, after I got here, back when I did crazy things like read the Gospel of Mark in a one single setting, and then we had everybody's like, "Oh yeah, I do remember that crazy thing he did." But we had a couple of lessons that came from that, because there were some phrases that just kept popping up over and over, and one of those phrases was the other side. I don't know if you remember a lesson that we did here shortly after reading the Gospel of Mark in its entirety, but we asked the question, what's on the other side? Well, every time we see that phrase, the other side, what's it talking about? What other side of what? Well, the other side of the Sea of Galilee. And well, what's over there? Why is he going from one side to the other? It's 7.5 miles across the Sea of Galilee to go right down through the center of it. So what's Jesus doing just bouncing around like a ping pong ball from one side of the Sea of Galilee to the other? Well, if you remember, a couple of nights before this, Jesus decided to go to the other side of the Sea of Galilee. He was on the western side of the sea, and he was going to go to the eastern side of the sea, to the land of the Gerasenes. And you remember, when he gets over there, that's when he encounters the man who is troubled with many, 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 many demons. Legion is the name that is given there. And Jesus allows the demons to leave the man and to go into the herd of swine. And they run down the hill and they jump into the sea, and the pigs all drown. And the people over there, they see everything that happens. They kind of investigate it. They're looking at Jesus, and they're looking at the man who now has clothes on and he's in his right mind. And then they probably see some air bubbles still coming up from the water where the pigs have just drowned. And they're asking the pig farmers, like the herders, like what happened? And they're telling their story. And based on all of that, they come to the conclusion that they need to ask Jesus to leave. They ask him to please leave their area. And so he gets back in the boat and yet again finds himself going to the other side of the Sea of Galilee. And when he gets to the other side this time, there is a multitude of people. Much different reaction on the eastern side of the Sea of Galilee. They're asking him to get in the boat and leave. On the western side of the Sea of Galilee, there is a large crowd of people just thronging all around him. He ends up having to stay in the right next to the seashore, just because at least then he's got some breathing room on one side, right? He's got the sea on one side, and he can actually have a little bit of space. And while this is going on, while this large crowd is all around him, one of the synagogue officials comes up to him. And he says, "My daughter is really sick and she's at the point of death, but if you can come and if you can lay hands on her, she'll get better. She'll get better. I know this. I know that if you come with me and you get to my house and you lay hands on my daughter, she will get well and live." Jesus, at least it's not recorded for us that Jesus said anything to him. That he just starts walking. He starts walking with this man. Now I want you to see something really amazing about Jesus here. And there's lots of things that are just amazing about Jesus and the way he lived his life and the way he deals with us as his creation. But you're going to see throughout the life of Jesus many different levels of faith in him. And the really awesome thing about Jesus is that he deals with us right where we are in our faith with him. Because the truth of the matter is, Jesus didn't have to go anywhere with this guy, did he? In fact, if you remember the story of a Roman soldier, a centurion that comes to Jesus, and Jesus is going to do something for him. I believe it's his son that's sick with a fever. And Jesus is going to go along with this guy. And the centurion says, "No, you don't need to come to my house. There's no reason for you to have to bother yourself or come. I'm not even worthy to have you come into my house. I understand how this works, Jesus. I am a man of authority. I command, I dispatch soldiers, I give orders, and when I give orders, those soldiers just go and do. You also are a man of the absolute authority, the greatest authority that exists. And so all you need to do, Jesus, you don't even have to move from your spot. You speak the word and my son will be healed." What an amazing faith is that? This guy gets it and he's a Roman. What an amazing story of faith. That's a level of faith that, man, I need to get to, right? That's the kind of faith that really understands the power that Jesus has. Well, this man, He doesn't say anything like that. He doesn't say, Jesus, if you'll just speak the word, my daughter will be healed. This man believes that Jesus needs to come with him, that he needs to go to his house, that Jesus needs to put his hands on his little daughter, and then she will get well. And we can see a little bit later in the story that Jesus is going to bring to light the problem here. Jesus is going to bring to the surface what's really going on in Jairus' heart. Jairus is afraid. And I don't mean to sit on my high horse and be judgmental of him, because I would have been afraid. Okay? His little girl is sick, and she is at the point of death, and he's not ready to let her go. What father would be? But it's Jairus' fear that's getting in the way of him just completely giving himself over to belief in Jesus' power, in Jesus' provision, in the salvation that Jesus can give. He believes that as long as I can get Jesus, if I can get him to come with me, and I can get him to my house in time, and if he can lay his hands on my daughter, she'll get better. And that fear is only going to grow worse throughout the rest of this chapter, up until the very end when Jesus finally raises his daughter from the dead. And that fear is going to grow because there's an interruption to the story. Everything seems like it's going according to plan. Jairus made it to Jesus. He told Jesus about his situation. He asked Jesus to come with him, and Jesus is following right along. Everything seems to be going according to plan. This is what needs to happen in order for my daughter to get better. Verse 25 tells us that there's a woman who had a hemorrhage of blood for 12 years. She had endured much at the hands of many physicians and had spent all that she had. They had not helped at all, but rather she had grown worse. After hearing about Jesus, she came up in the crowd behind him and touched his cloak. For she had thought, the text says, if I just touch his garments, I will get well. And notice, this is a different kind of belief, a different level of belief. Jairus believes that if Jesus makes it to my house and he touches my daughter, she'll be healed. This woman believes that she could be healed without anyone ever having to know about it. Without anyone ever having to be aware of the fact that she had touched Jesus in this way. I mean, what she's planning, what she's plotting in this particular time, it was illegal for her to do what she's doing. Yet she's pushing herself through the crowd, just trying to weave through the massive amounts of people to get as close as she can to Jesus. I imagine that this woman is down on the ground, you know, crawling to Jesus at times, just wanting to touch the very edge of the garment. It doesn't even have to give him a hug or anything. I just need to touch the very bottom of his garment. And if I touch him, I can get well. And so that's what she does. She goes through the crowd. She touches Jesus' clothes. And immediately, the problem is fixed. Immediately, this flow of blood that has plagued her for 12 years. We find out a little bit later that Jairus' daughter is 12 years old. Put that in perspective. For the entirety of this little girl's life, this woman has been walking around as a dead woman. Someone who is exiled apart from her people. Not allowed to go near anyone or anything. Think about that. For 12 years. Years. Every single spot that this woman sat on, every chair that she sat on. Well, now not only is she unclean, but now that's unclean. And so nobody can sit there because it's unclean. Every bed on which this woman slept, it also becomes unclean. Every person that she touches becomes unclean. How many people that day were made unclean as she weaved her way through the crowd to make it to Jesus? But she has this faith in Jesus that if I just get close enough to touch just the tip of His garments, I can get well. I know it. And for a woman who now has no money, has no hope, the doctors have even been taking advantage of her, she's not gotten any better, she's only getting worse, this woman heard about Jesus and knew that He was the answer to her problem. And so, nothing is slowing down Jesus at this point. He's still walking with Jairus, and they're headed toward his house. And the woman has come up behind him as they walk, and she's touched the garments. Here's where the problem starts to begin for Jairus. It's when Jesus feels the power go out of him, and he turns around and he says, "Who touched my clothes?" That's kind of funny, isn't it? And the disciples kind of thought it was, maybe not funny, but interesting. Jesus, there's tons of people around you right now. Everybody's pressing in on you. We're having to battle the crowds ourselves just to move. And you want to know who touched you? Who touched your clothes? Verse 32 says he looked around to see the woman who had done this. And notice the difference in her mentality at this point. She's now fearing and trembling. Her faith is being battled by the enemy of fear. Fear of being found out. Fear of being arrested, maybe. Fear of Jesus's rebuke. Fear that he's going to undo it now. You know, fear that the problem's going to come back. And so she's just there. I just imagine her on her knees, kneeling before Jesus as Jesus turns around and looks at her. And it says in verse 33 that the woman feared and trembled, aware of what had happened to her. And she came and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. Here this woman is now faced with unloading everything on Jesus. And one of the takeaways, I mean, this is one of the things that I want us to consider from this lesson today. One of the takeaways I want us to have from this is trying to ask ourselves the question, what fears do we have that are holding us back? What fears do we have that are holding us back from just surrendering our everything to God? Surrendering our everything to Jesus. To give Him our whole self. Are we fearful, like this woman, of what it would mean to tell Jesus the whole truth? Can you do that? Could you tell God the whole truth about your life? Could you stand up in front of anybody and tell them the whole truth? That's a fearful thing, isn't it? Fear of being found out. Fear of being judged. Fear of being looked at as an evil and wicked person. What about the fear of not fitting in? The fear of missing out on something. The fear of not looking like all the rest of the people around us. What about the fear of just being labeled? The fear of not not being cool in the eyes of our peers, our neighbors, our friends. What about in the case of Jairus's fear? What about the fear of my children? I fear that my children won't make it. They're one of them sick, and I'm afraid that she's not going to make it. He's not going to make it. What about the fear of dying yourself? The fear of never getting better. You have a chronic issue in your life, and I'm just afraid that it's never going to get any better. I'm afraid people are talking about me. I'm afraid that people don't like me. I'm afraid that, I mean, think about all the different fears that are out there and which ones of those fears are holding us back from having that faith, that God-honoring, soul-saving, life-sustaining faith that Jesus wants us to have in response to who He is. We've seen His power. We know who He is. We know what He's capable of. What is it that's holding us back from just giving our full surrender of faith to Him? Can you imagine what fears were welling up in Jairus' heart? Jairus is on a very quick timetable. He's got to get there fast. This little girl's going to die. And yet Jesus is turning around. He's now conversing with this woman. I don't know how long it took this woman to tell Jesus the whole truth. I don't even know what all the whole truth was for her. But it took a lot longer than it would have been comfortable for Jairus, wouldn't you say? Every single word, Jairus is probably sitting there thinking, "Let's go, Jesus, we gotta go, we gotta go." It's like parents herding their kids out the door on Sunday morning, "We gotta go, we gotta get there, we're running late." And Jairus, I mean, just fear just welling up inside of him. Time is ticking. And I'm afraid that we're going to run out of time. And then, we said a moment ago, Jesus meets us where we are and He stretches us to greater faith, to greater belief in Him. And so Jesus, almost in the same way that Jesus delayed when He was told about Lazarus being sick, you know, almost in the same way, it's almost like Jesus is delaying. He's talking with this woman and Jairus' worst fears come true. A messenger comes to Jairus and tells him that his daughter has died and there's no need to trouble the teacher anymore. And you can imagine that Jairus' heart was crushed when he heard that. Because really the only thing, if you've got a daughter who is about to die, the only thing possible that might pull you away from her side is if you think there's a chance that she could be saved. And by you leaving and going somewhere and getting something and bringing it back or bringing this person back, it's going to save her life. And now all of that has failed. And his little girl is dead. And Jesus overhears this. He overhears this conversation between the messenger and Jairus. And he says to him, "Do not be afraid any longer. Do not be afraid any longer. Only believe." That's where we see our contrast, don't we? That the opposite of belief is fear. Fear holds us back. Now, I've seen it said, and I've never verified this to be true, but I've seen it said that the Bible has some variation of do not fear or fear not or do not be afraid any longer. Anything like that. That the Bible says that 365 times. And that makes a really nice meme that you can post on Facebook that says, this is a daily reminder from God not to be afraid. And I have no idea if it's 365 times, but I do know that it's in there a lot. The idea that God does not want us to be afraid anymore. He doesn't want us to be afraid. He wants us to believe in Him, to believe in His power, to trust in His grace, His providence, His deliverance. But fear creeps in and can hold us back from that in a lot of different ways. And so they continue on to the house, and Peter, James, and John go with him, and I imagine Jairus is cautiously optimistic. I mean, I'm sure he believes that what the messenger told him was true. Surely he wouldn't have told him that his daughter had died if there was any question about it. But yet Jesus has given him reason for hope and told him not to be afraid, just believe. And so they come upon the scene, and Jesus says, she's not dead, she's just sleeping. And he puts them all out, and he tells the little girl to get up, and she immediately, there's that word again, immediately, when Jesus speaks, when Jesus does, immediately things happen. And that's what happened for this little girl. And what Jesus had said to Jairus was true. He needed to stop. He needed to stop being fearful. And just believe in what Jesus could do and the power that He had. The other thing that I want to mention from this text, I want you to think about what it must have been like for this woman and for Jairus after all the fear is gone. All right, so think about the woman for just a moment. And yes, in the initial verses right after she's been healed, there's fear and trembling. But after she tells Jesus the whole truth, she gets to walk away from the scene that day. And imagine what she must have felt like. 12 years of uncleanness. 12 years of not being able to interact with your family, friends, even just anybody in the population. 12 years of pain, 12 years of frustration, 12 years of embarrassment and awkwardness. It's all gone in an instant. And just think about how she must have felt as she walked away from Jesus that day. And just this wow feeling. The same for Jairus. When he gets to hold his little girl again. The last time he saw her, she was about to die. Now she's up walking around and Jesus says, give her something to eat. She's got to be hungry. Wow. Coming away from Jesus with just this wow moment of look at what He did. I knew He was capable of this, but wow, I didn't realize how amazing it was going to feel on the other side of this when Jesus got involved and the situation got dealt with. Wow! The other thing I want you to think about, the first thing was what is it that I'm fearful of that holds me back? And the second thing I want you to think about after we leave today is what are your wow moments with Jesus? What are the moments where you walk away from a situation and you think, wow, nobody could have done this. Only Jesus could have done that. I mean, I've been trying to get this problem solved, a solution here for years, and only Jesus could have done what's happened here. What are your wow moments? And I want to make this suggestion. If it's difficult for you to think of wow moments with Jesus, if it's difficult for you to remember the last wow moment that you have, I want you to consider what your walk with the Lord looks like. Because, to be quite honest, you can't spend time with Jesus. You can't know who He really is and not be walking away on a regular basis saying, wow, only Jesus could do this. Only He could have fixed this situation. Only He could have forgiven me and cleansed me in this way. I feel like sometimes we don't have as many wow moments as we should. Which kind of leads us back to our first question. What is it that's holding us back from knowing the real Jesus, the true Jesus? From trusting fully in His power so that we can just give it up to Him, and then walk away and say, wow, look at what He did. Look at what He did. We're reading through the book of Judges right now in our family worship time, and we've just recently read through the story of Gideon. And I'm sure many of us are familiar with the story of Gideon and the army of 300, and they put the torches in the pots, and their battle strategy was to break the pots and expose the fire and shout. And everybody down below would be so fearful that they would just run around stabbing each other. And guess what? That's exactly what happened, because that's what God said would happen. And the most interesting thing that I found in reading that story again and seeing it with fresh eyes was just the idea that God really does care who gets the glory in situations of our lives. Like He really wants us not only to experience His healing, to experience His power, but for us to know that there was no other way that this could have gotten done but for God and His power and His love and His mercy and His kindness toward us. And so I would just say, if we're not walking through this life on a regular basis and just seeing the amazing things that Jesus has done, maybe it's because we don't really know who this Jesus is. We're not believing in Him in the way that we need to in order to experience the fullness of His goodness and what He came to offer us in this life. Do you know Jesus this morning? Do you know the real Jesus, the one who, when you come in contact with Him, you walk away from Him saying, wow, every single time? Is that the Jesus that you know? If not, we want to help you. We want to help you meet the real Jesus, the one whose power is without measure, the one whose grace is likewise immeasurable. The one whose healing can be real to you, just like it was for them in these stories. And we can walk away from our encounters with Him just being amazed and in awe of who He is. And if you're ready to encounter the real Jesus, we want to introduce you to Him as we rediscover who the real Jesus is in our own lives. We want to invite you to come and meet Him, and He will meet you where you are and begin a walk with you and a journey of faith that will lead you to life everlasting. If you're ready to make that commitment to the Lord this day, please come forward as we stand and sing this song to encourage you.